Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio is a city celebrated for its commitment to historic preservation. But has that drive to keep older neighborhoods a historic designation, has it gone too far? A recent dust-up in Menke Park over giving that neighborhood a historic designation has created some issues. Do you live in a historic neighborhood? How is that working out for you? Do you live in Menke Park? Tell us about what your experiences have been with going through this process. The number to call is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. You can also email us your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org or go to the comments section on our webpage at tpr.org. And with us to talk about the process of historic designation, Shanna Shea Miller. She's the director of the Office of Historic Preservation for the City of San Antonio. Shannon, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
So how difficult is it in San Antonio to get your neighborhood to be, get historic preservation?
Well, there is a process that was adopted by council in 2012 for the creation of new historic districts. And the way it works is an interested property owner or group of owners or a neighborhood association can submit an application to the Office of Historic Preservation for the creation of a local historic district. And when we have to verify that the neighborhood is eligible. Obviously, you know, if somebody submitted their 1980s subdivision, we might say thank you, but not, this is not the tool.
But if it was a cool disco-looking kind of a
well,
place.
Potentially, I suppose. So once we determine that it is eligible, then we send out a letter to all the property owners that would be in the proposed district and have an informational meeting for them to be able to answer questions. And then the city council was really deliberate when they adopted these changes to make sure that the next step in the process was really focused on the neighborhood communicating amongst itself. And so neighbors talking to neighbors about whether or not the historic district is the right thing for them. And so OHP is fairly hands-off during the petition collection process. We're available for questions and to be a resource, but it is not the city that gathers the petitions in favor or support. I mean, in favor or opposition. It is the people who have proposed the historic district. And so once we receive a petition that indicates the support of the owners of 30% of the properties in the proposed district, then we can initiate the public hearing process for the historic designation. And that means it is scheduled for HDRC, the Historic and Design Review Commission, the Zoning Commission, and the City Council.
So the 30% starts the discussion. It doesn't
Yes.
automatically make it a historic neighborhood.
Absolutely. And that's a very important distinction. Zoning is a power that is reserved only for the City Council in the state of Texas, and historic designation is a zoning change. And so the decision is made exclusively by City Council. So the petition is really just so that City Council can feel comfortable that there was at least enough interest to warrant going through that public hearing process to talk about whether or not historic designation is appropriate for that neighborhood.
Now, you said this way this is done changed in 2012. How was it before? Did we raise the bar, lower the bar?
Well, we kind of reversed the bar. So prior to late 2012, the way the process worked is someone could request to initiate a district, and then we would send out a letter and have the informational meeting similar to the way we do it now. And then there would be a 90-day period. And if during that period we didn't receive opposition from at least 51% of the property owners, then the public hearing process could move forward.
That's the way it used to be.
Yes.
And that was putting more responsibility on the people who didn't want it to be.
Well, sort of. It really just didn't play well. Like the public was really upset about the perception that if they didn't vote no, that they thought that they would be counted as having voted yes. And that wasn't the way the process worked, but that was the perception out there. And so that is what really spurred the City Council to say, hey, let's take a look at this process again. And prior to that previous process, there had been a higher level of support that was required. And council, the reason it was changed is that council felt like that was too egregious. And I mean, you know how voter turnout is. Like, there's a lot of apathy. Not everyone is going to participate. And so if the level is too high, then you'll never see another historic district. So they felt like 30% was enough to show that there was some level of interest, but it wasn't egregious so that we'd never see another historic district.
So how does San Antonio compare to, say, like Houston or Dallas?
Well, Houston is a weird, you know, it's a strange animal.
Because those cities are not known for their embracing of historic neighborhoods and stuff.
Well, and Houston doesn't have zoning in the same way of city of other cities.
Of any place.
Yeah. And so Houston's a little bit different. But we did do a comparison when the process was changed in 2012. And I don't remember every city specifically, but we looked at several major cities around the country that do historic preservation, New Orleans, Chicago, and then also other cities in Texas like Fort Worth and Dallas and El Paso. And several cities don't have owner consent requirements at all. Some people believe that the owner consent requirement just kind of creates this false impression that it's the neighborhood that makes the determination and when really it's the council. Others have a 50% requirement. Usually it's 50% or less to move a process forward, but a substantial number of cities don't have any level of owner consent required. It's just a public hearing process.
So it's really a hodgepodge looking across different cities, do it in different ways.
Yes.
Okay, so, but here in San Antonio, we're known for historic preservation, preserving things like the King William neighborhood and some other neighborhoods around Digwilly Hill. All that stuff has been very successful for San Antonio. It looks like people look to us. San Antonio's been a model city for a lot of these places. How does San Antonio do it, they ask?
Absolutely. We definitely are because we have one of the oldest preservation programs in the country. And so we get lots of calls asking us how we do things and looking to San Antonio as the model. And because we have been very successful, we have 27 local historic districts currently and over 1,300 landmarks. And of course, we have the river, so we have the river improvement overlay. And so, you know, we've invested a lot of time and energy into protecting that, which makes San Antonio unique.
Now, Mankey Park is where this ground zero right now for this conflict about whether or not they want to be a historic designated neighborhood. Some people are saying we don't want that, and they're getting kind of testy out there about that. What's happening there? What's the status right now with Mankey Park?
Well, we did receive an application from some residents of Mankey Park in January of this year, 2014. And that application in April, we had received petitions in support that met the 30% threshold. And so we scheduled it for HDRC. And I believe it was June, early June, it went to HDRC. And on the days leading up to the meeting at HDRC and the day of the meeting, we received some additional petitions last minute that were not able to be verified before that hearing. And what we also knew is that a significant number of people had changed their votes. So we had received a petition in favor, and then we received a petition in opposition. And so we had to contact each of those owners to determine which one was the valid petition. And so after doing that, we realized that the level of support has fallen below 30%. And so right now the application is just pending. It will not be scheduled for the HDRC unless and until it reaches that 30% threshold again.
Okay, we're going to talk more about that because that was a lot to unpack about where we are with Mankey Park. We're going to continue this conversation talking about historic neighborhood designation in San Antonio, the process, and what some of the people who live in Mankey Park, what they have to say about this. We invite you to call in. The number is 210-614-8980. Or if you don't live in Mankey Park, but you live in a historic neighborhood, how has this worked out for you? The number is 210-614-8980. Has it been burdensome for you? Or you can also email us at thesource@tpr.org. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the process to make neighborhoods in San Antonio, giving them historic designation. What does that mean? Mankey Park, they've been going back and forth about whether or not to give historic designation to that neighborhood. Some residents there want it. Other residents don't want it. We'd love to hear from some of the people who live out there. What do you want to see happen to your neighborhood and why? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. With me to talk about historic preservation designations in San Antonio, Shannon Shea Miller, the director of the Office of Historic Preservation. So when we went to break, you gave me this really long answer about where we are with Manke Park's application. And the short answer is it's in limbo. Is that it?
Yes. I mean, basically, we just have a pending application. We're in the same place we were before it went to HDRC that first time because we have not met that 30% threshold at this time. And so it won't. The public hearing process doesn't move forward unless there's that 30% threshold in place.
So the people who do not want historic designation for Manke Park will get what they'll accomplish that goal if things remain the same right now.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, but the things could change rapidly if the people who do want a historic designation get their act together and come to you and are able to provide evidence that they have support.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I think we've got that clear now. So let's go to the phone lines if you want to weigh in on this. We'd love to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. Bill has called in. Bill, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, good deal. Hey, I live in Manke Park, and I've been experiencing this historical thing firsthand, longtime residents, and kind of saw this coming. But I have a couple of questions from just my observations. Number one, I'm wondering if the petitions, where the petitioners are identified by address, if that can be somewhat secretive to kind of avoid any kind of peer pressure from other neighbors saying, no, I want you to vote this way, I want you to go that way. So almost similar to like a secret ballot, but you know what I'm saying there. And then another thing that I hear from so many people in the neighborhood is they're looking for a middle ground. They don't want to see a lot of these homes torn down, and they don't want to see something just, McMansion or something built next to them, obstructing their views and, wind and light and everything else. And so those are the two main concerns I come up against when talking with people. Number one, a little bit more confidentiality in that petitioning. And number two, is there some sort of middle ground to protect the integrity of the neighborhood without going historic? And I'll just take the answers off the air if you don't mind.
Okay, Bill, thank you for calling in. Appreciate some good points there. So an anonymous part of petitioning that kind of goes against the whole idea of what a petition is trying to accomplish, right?
Well, it's true, but it is a very good question. We have actually received that question from a number of residents who are concerned about people feeling pressured to vote one way or the other. And it is something that we are looking into with our city attorney's office. But the challenge, of course, is that we're a public municipality, and so we have to comply with open records requests and open records requirements. And so, it's very difficult not to show the map or the petitions in order to document that we've reached the threshold that we have to reach. So it would be very difficult to go through the public process without revealing that information. But it is a very valid question, and
especially in this era of distrust of City Hall, where we say we got 30% of the names, but we can't tell you who they are. Well, that's not going to wash.
Yeah, it's true, but it is a very valid question, and we definitely are looking into that to see if there's a way that we could do it to make it a little.
But
bit
it's terrible
more
that people can't sign their names on something as mundane, as banal as a petition for something like this, and they're afraid they're going to get ostracized from the park or whatever.
Yeah, I mean it is unfortunate, but I think some people do feel that kind of peer pressure and worry about that.
So the other part of Bill's question was about a middle ground, finding some way to protect the neighborhood from McMansions. We've seen this before, where someone will come in because it's a beautiful neighborhood and it's a great location, and knock down one of these cottage type homes and then put up one of these modern monstrosities.
Right. I think for a lot of people, there's a perception that the conservation district tool is kind of a middle ground. It's some level of protection, but it's not a historic district. The challenge is that Manke Park is currently a conservation district, and I think many people have been frustrated by the fact that it isn't quite as strong as they had hoped, and it does not provide protection against demolition and really some of the new construction that can be seen in the neighborhoods. And so I think people will find if they look at it objectively that historic district designation really is that tool, and it is a way to protect one's property rights and investment in their property by ensuring that change is managed in a way that is consistent with the character of the neighborhood. And, you know, there are a lot of myths out there about how difficult or challenging it'll be to go through the process. But the reality is that the HDRC approves 98 to 99% of its cases each year. And that's only a fraction of the reviews that are done, because the majority of them are done administratively and never even require commission action at all. So the process is really much simpler than it is perceived.
Okay, back to the phone lines. Gary Cox is called in, and Gary has run the opposition group for making Mankey Park a historic designated neighborhood. Gary, are you there? Hey, Gary, you're caught in the radio delay land.
I'm here.
Okay, Gary, go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, my question is, why has OHP canceled their public hearing this Saturday, when that was an opportunity for them to come out and inform the people for historic as well as the opposition? Because we're working on a lot of hearsay and second opinion. We don't have clarity in their verbiage.
Okay, well, don't go away, Gary, because I want to keep you on the line. So go ahead and answer the question, Shannon.
Yes, there's been a bit of confusion about the dates for the meetings. There was a tentative meeting scheduled for this Saturday, but the Office of Historic Preservation had not issued meeting dates. And once we realized, we were first waiting to make sure that we still had an appropriate threshold to move forward with the process. Once we realized that we didn't, we felt like the mailed notice that went out last week was too short of notice for a meeting this Saturday. We want to make sure and give people at least 2 weeks' notice to plan to come to the meeting when it's held. So we have not. We still will continue with the promise to host community information meetings, and all residents of Mankey Park that are in the proposed district will be invited. But just to restate, there was a bit of confusion about those meeting dates being finalized when they were really still just tentative meeting dates pending our review of the petitions.
So when's the next meeting?
I don't have the date off the top of my head. We're looking at an early September date, so there will be plenty of opportunity to notify residents. It will be on our website and our Facebook page as soon as it's set. And again, as I said, the Mankey Park residents in the proposed district will receive notice by mail.
Okay, but nothing's going to happen between now and then, right?
No, right.
Okay. So, Gary Cox, you run the opposition group trying to keep Mankey Park from becoming historic designated neighborhood. So what are you – tell me why you're doing it.
When I went to the HDRC meeting, they said there would be 3 public hearings before October 1st to inform the residents of Mankey Park. Now they pushed it down to having their first meeting, the first of September or sometime early September. Are they still going to have 3 hearings before the 1st of October, or until they can rally enough support of 30% or more?
Okay, Shannon.
Yes. Well, Gary, just to clarify, the motion that was made by the HDRC was to hold 3 public meetings before Mankey Park came back to the HDRC. And we thought that was going to be on October 1st at the time. But now that we don't have the threshold, there is no HDRC hearing scheduled. And so the October 1st deadline is now artificial. So we will honor our commitment to have 3 public meetings, but they won't necessarily happen prior to October 1st.
Is that clear, Gary? You got that?
Why don't you go ahead and have the public meetings without the 30% support, so that we can inform the people?
We are going to have the public meetings. They will be scheduled, and you will receive by mail a list of all 3 of the public meeting dates.
Okay, Gary, thanks for calling in. Appreciate your input, and we'd love to have you on later when we do the show. We're going to follow up on this program, on this some more. Let's get Pat on the line. Pat has called in. Pat, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. How are you? Thank you for taking the call.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate it. Yes, I'm a longtime resident of the Mankey Park area for more than 15 years. And I guess my main concern and comment is that Who is really able to sign up for either side, against or pro? There seems to be also some confusion on that. There's a lot of renters in the area who are signing the forms either in either direction. And there's also many absentee landlords who have never helped the community for the 15 years that I've been there, yet all of a sudden they're the leaders of the opposition. I'm really concerned about that. We won't mention any names. We know who they are. But I'm just wondering, these people are, there's even a former politician involved. We're really masters at misinformation.
Okay, Pat, thanks for calling in. Appreciate that question. So renters, can they sign? Absentee landlords, does that matter?
It is property owners. So renters cannot sign the petition, but of course owners that do not live in the neighborhood can sign if they are in fact the property owner.
All right. Shannon Shea Miller, the director of the Office of Historic Preservation, giving us an update on how things stand with the Menke Park and also the entire system of making San Antonio neighborhoods historic designation. Thank you for joining us, Shannon. Appreciate that.
Yes, thank you for having me.
And this is The Source on KSTX. Just if you didn't catch the news before, now the ballot in November will not have a question about streetcar. We'll have more on that in some TPR newscast coming up. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.